The moon from the summit of the heavens had long since lit up the whole courtyard filled with sleepers, the thick clump of willows, and the tall stepgrass, which hid the palisade surrounding the court. She still sat at her son's pillow, never removing her eyes from them for a moment, nor thinking of sleep. Already the horses, divining the approach of dawn, had ceased eating and lain down upon the grass. The topmost leaves of the willows began to rustle softly, and little by little the rippling rustle descended to their bases. She sat there until daylight, unwearied, and wishing in her heart that the night might prolong itself indefinitely. From the steps came the ringing neigh of the horses, and red streaks shone brightly in the sky. Bulba suddenly awoke and sprang to his feet. He remembered quite well what he had ordered the night before. "Now, my men, you've slept enough. Tis time. Water the horses. And where is the old woman?" He generally called his wife so. "Be quick, old woman, get us something to eat. The way is long." The poor old woman, deprived of her last hope, slipped sadly into the hut. Whilst she, with tears, prepared what was needed for breakfast, Bulba gave his orders, went to the stable, and selected his best trappings for his children with his own hand. The scholars were suddenly transformed. Red Morocco boots with silver heels took the place of their dirty old ones. Trousers wide as the Black Sea, with countless folds and plaits, were kept up by golden girdles from which hung long slender thongs, with tassels and other tinkling things, for pipes. Their jackets of scarlet cloth were girt by flowered sashes into which were thrust engraved Turkish pistols. Their swords clinked at their heels. Their faces, already a little sunburnt, seemed to have grown handsomer and whiter. Their slight black mustaches now cast a more distinct shadow on this pallor and set off their healthy, youthful complexions. They looked very handsome in their black sheepskin caps, with cloth of gold crowns. When their poor mother saw them, she could not utter a word, and tears stood in her eyes. "Now, my lads, all is ready. No delay," said Bulba at last. "But we must first all sit down together, in accordance with Christian custom, before a journey." All sat down, not excepting the servants, who had been standing respectfully at the door. "Now, mother, bless your children," said Bulba. "Pray God that they may fight bravely, always defend their warlike honor, always defend the faith of Christ, and, if not, that they may die, so that their breath may not be longer in the world. Come to your mother, children. A mother's prayer protects on land and sea." The mother, weak as mothers are, embraced them, drew out two small holy pictures and hung them, sobbing, around their necks. "May God's mother keep you. Children, do not forget your mother. Send some little word of yourselves. She could say no more." "Now, children, let us go," said Bulba. At the door stood the horses, ready saddled. Bulba sprang upon his devil, which bounded wildly, on feeling on his back a load of over 30 stone, for Teres was extremely stout and heavy. When the mother saw that her sons were also mounted, she rushed towards the younger, whose features expressed somewhat more gentleness than those of his brother. She grasped his stirrup, clung to his saddle, and with despair in her eyes, refused to loose her hold. Two stout Cossacks seized her carefully and bore her back into the hut. But before the cavalcade had passed out of the courtyard, she rushed with the speed of a wild goat, disproportionate to her years, to the gate, stopped a horse with irresistible strength, and embraced one of her sons with mad, unconscious violence. Then they led her away again. The young Cossacks rode on sadly, repressing their tears out of fear of their father, who, on his side, was somewhat moved, although he strove not to show it. The morning was gray, the green sward bright, the birds twittered rather discordantly. They glanced back as they rode. Their paternal farm seemed to have sunk into the earth. All that was visible above the surface were the two chimneys of their modest hut and the tops of the trees up whose trunks they had been used to climb like squirrels. Before them still stretched the field by which they could recall the whole story of their lives, from the years when they rolled in its dewy grass down to the years when they awaited in it the dark-browed Cossack maiden, running timidly across it on quick young feet. There is the pole above the well, with the wagon wheel fastened to its top, rising solitary against the sky. Already the level which they have traversed appears a hill in the distance, and now